Guys, and welcome back to another episode of Comic Book Legion Podcast. And I apologize, I hear my little sister screaming behind this door. I hope that nobody else can hear that.
I can't hear it.
Okay, cool. Then we should be good.
No, I can, but it's okay.
Wait, really? You can?
Yeah, I can hear.
Awesome.
I heard a no!
Great, great. All right. Anyway, how you been, Mark? How you been? Been good?
I'm good. I'm here. The house is... We got realtors looking at our house. I have no furniture. As you heard from our beginning of us speaking, I have a really bad echo because everything is out of my house. So it's just wood floor everywhere. But I was able to mask it, I think, with some chairs.
Nice.
Just a whole bunch of fabric-y chairs. So, you know, we'll see. But besides that, it's good. It's comic books, man. We're talking comic books.
Yes, I am.
Later than what we normally do, because we usually talk on New Comic Book Day.
Yeah, we both had some things come up this week, which isn't completely bad. But, you know, I did take it, you know, for the past 2 days that we didn't get to record, I did go back to some of these books, look at some of the details, got to hear some other people's thoughts. I'm not going to use those thoughts to question my own. You know, I stand firm on a lot of things that I think about these books. But it's very interesting what people are saying about books like Curse of the White Knight, which we're going to be talking about, and Detective Comics, which we're going to be talking about. But the first book we're going to be talking about is Action Comics. It's Action Comics let me scroll all the way up.
1013.
Of course, Brian Michael Bendis is the writer. We have a really cool... I say really cool. It does look a little off for his art, but is it Jamal Campbell on that front cover? Is that...
Jamal Campbell, yeah. He did do the art on the front cover.
Okay.
I don't know if he did the colors, even though there does seem to be a lot of the...
Well, it does look like there is another signature on the covers. It says Price, so it might be somebody else. And I just realized that's Frank Quietly who did the Lex Luthor cover. That's awesome. But it was...
Well, you didn't notice that from, like, first looking at it?
I questioned it because Frank Quietly has a very specific, like, style.
Yeah.
The last cover I saw him do, though, was, like, he did the variant cover for Green Lantern.
Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Issue number one. So, yeah, it was Jamal Campbell on the cover. Artist is Simone...
Kudrinsky.
Kudrinsky.
Yeah, I didn't want to say the first name because I figured I was going to butcher it.
And then Brad Anderson on colors. I love Brad Anderson's colors. Really popped in this entire issue. That's one thing that I do like about this art on the interiors. Dave Sharp on letters. And it says Ben Oliver is on the variant cover. Wow. They straight up just said, nope, Frank, I'm sorry. We're not going to give you credit. That's hilarious. So we open up with this book with... What Leon, looking at
Miss Leon.
Yeah, Miss Leon looking at the DC Comics version of Twitter, and she is getting the offer from Lex Luthor. This is one of the, I will say, few pet peeves or nitpicks that I had with this book. You know, because it's Bendis, I know a lot of people are waiting for me to crap all over this book. It wasn't completely bad. I really enjoyed some of the art. there was some things of topic that I didn't agree with, such as this offer. Lex Luthor has not had any interactions prior to the whole Legion of Doom with Leon or Miss Goodman, and he ends up making the offer to both. I know that people can probably chalk that up to, oh, it was the Brainiac technology that got a hold of every villain, but I mean, with as secretive as this secret mafia is supposed to be, like, I find it really hard to believe that Lex Luthor would be able to find these two. So that was my one nitpick for this. But with the offer, Miss Leon is like, yeah, F you, Lex Luthor. You know, I don't want have anything to do with this. They like destroy their entire house that Miss Leon was living in. And that was super crazy. Looked like something out of a freaking Harry Potter story. but we get to see Robinson Good and Perry White talk. That back and forth was okay. I know that, you know, this whole Robinson Good thing has been about kind of being better than Lois Lane and being one of the better reporters, so that way, you know, they, as an organization from the Invisible Mafia or whatever, they can, you know, be the best of the best wherever they're stationed, especially in the Daily Planet, because Miss Leon, you know, bought the planet with this new rendition in Bendis's run. We get a little bit more information on the Rose and Thorn character. Like I said, I thought this was a new character that Bendis created. Apparently not. Apparently she has been in DC mythos for quite some time. I did not know that, so I wanted to apologize for that. But this whole interaction with the Leviathan agents, we have been seeing that they are, you know, old organization members from, you know,
yeah,
the Spiral and from the DEO and all those things. So we see a little bit of that. We see that Robinson Good is still having, you know, problems with her, with holding her power in. And that's basically it. We see that, I can't remember if it was you or if it was Kevin or if I had heard it somewhere else, that there was an assumption that the Leviathan power was more about transporting rather than destroying. And I think this confirms it.
Well, I mean, I know that I've said it. I'm sure that maybe we've had the conversation on the Slack chat.
Yeah.
It was more of one of those things where it would have just felt very weird that everyone that you're seeing in this book is legit dying.
Yeah.
Because then it's, you know, yes, it's a grim story and, you know, it's little by little, I mean, we're going to have to start to get some revelations of what exactly is going on. So I'm happy that we were able to get one of the big mysteries, which is what happens when, you know, the big light and everybody disappears except that one person that's literally seeing everybody evaporate. Yes, that was a good reveal. I actually, it's kind of funny that you're saying that out of all the issues that from Bendis or the Action Comics, this one to me was one that I didn't really like that much. And I find it more because I actually find Robinson Good to be a very, like, it's annoying. Like, yes. I thought she was going to have, I enjoyed her more in the beginning, but then it was kind of like after she found out who Clark was based on her own little test, and I don't know, she's kind of just been, like, annoying, like, on the side. Like, she doesn't have, like, that same purpose that you kind of saw in the beginning of when you first met her. And it's, now, you know, you get, like, these conversations with Perry trying to push her, and everything just seems like tests.
Uh-huh.
That I'm just like, eh, it just feels like I wouldn't be surprised if Perry knows that Robinson is no good. And then it's going to be one of those things that, you know, I've been doing this a long time, you know? you don't think I wouldn't know, like, a rat when I see one,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then, you know, he's never been able to tell that Clark is Superman. Like, I feel like something like that's going to happen just because the conversations between Perry and Robinson, it's either too on the nose or, like, what you kind of say is sometimes Bendis, his issues with, like, lack of dialogue or having, like, conversations that kind of mesh together.
Yeah.
So when I saw, I was like, oh, God, it just feels forced. I can buy the Luther one and Miss Leone better. And that's mainly just because, dude, when you're so powerful, I mean, people are just hidden just because they don't have something to do with you right now.
Yeah.
But I feel like they're going to know every player in the game. Or at least as much as they know.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, even if you didn't, you're not going to show it. So you can always kind of play things off.
Well, one thing...
But I do think that the Brainiac technology, I do believe that could play a part in it.
Yeah.
But I also think that when you're so big, you know what's up.
Well, I kind of just thought about this, you know, since Miss Leone kind of ran out and said, you know, forget this, I don't want anything to do with you, Luther. And then Robinson Good accepted the offer basically and got these new powers. I wonder if that's going to kind of build up a wall between Leone and Robinson Good. You know, Robinson Good now saying, oh, look, I have all this power. I don't need you. You know, maybe something like that, which that would be kind of interesting, to be completely honest. I don't know how this new power made her a completely different person. Now she doesn't even look like she's smoky at all. Now she just looks like a demon. But, you know, I've been trying really hard to not judge too fast. Because, like you said, we had the conversation that my distaste for Bendis was the same as you with Donny Cates. So whenever you hear Donny Cates...
Marvel Donny Cates.
Marvel Donny Cates, sorry. Yeah, because he Bitter Roots, right? He writes Bitter Roots? Or no?
Well, I mean, he does, like, Buzzkill, Baby Teeth.
Yeah, Baby Teeth.
Redneck.
That's, Redneck.
God Country.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he's...
Yeah, his image stuff and his indie stuff, really, really, really good. But Marvel Donny Cates, you know... Like you were saying, it's just as soon as he gets on another book, you're just like, oh my God. I've really tried to stop, you know, judging Bendis. And one thing that
I will say that Donny Cates, what he's doing in Marvel, I'm sure, I mean, I just based on how it's received, but sometimes, you know, that doesn't mean anything, is mm-hmm. much better than how Bendis is being received in DC.
Yes. Yes, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. That's without saying, but, you know.
Yeah.
Just in terms of taste.
So, you know, I'm taking his Legion with a grain of salt because from what I've heard on a Word Balloon interview is that he is basically writing, like, some people won't like this just because, you know, they are legacy characters, but he's writing them as though they were brand new characters brought into the DC universe. And the only thing that I really see as good for Bendis is whenever he creates new characters, you know, he does have like a really good light on those characters that he creates. So I'm hoping that it's good. I'm still very cautious with legacy characters like that being brought in by somebody who thinks that, you know, they are the best new thing since sliced bread. But we'll see. We will definitely see.
Now, one thing I would say, a nitpick that... It's not even a nitpick. I guess it's just more in terms of taste. I do not like Kutrinsky. I'm sorry if I know I'm butchering the name. On Superman. He does not draw a nice... Well, I mean, you get like two different versions.
Yeah.
I feel like even Perry White looked inconsistent.
Yeah, I was just about to say, there's a panel...
Confronted by...
There's a panel where Superman is getting, like, that teleported or whatever, and just, like, his facial features and everything else, it does change throughout the entire book. Like, the very first time you see Superman is in the sky with the birds and everything, and mm-hmm. that panel looks pretty cool. Like, it really does. But the very next time you see him close up, he's talking to that Leviathan soldier, And his facial structure just looks completely different.
No, yeah. And when you see, like, the moment when he's like, this is Leviathan.
I literally just scrolled down to it. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's just panels that I can't handle. Because when you kind of see him talking to Thorne and saying, like, get behind me, he's like, oh, okay, that's not a bad profile. But Superman was all over the place.
Well, no. You see that Thorne get behind me? The very next panel, look at that.
No, it's rough.
Yeah.
It's really rough. Yeah, so it was kind of hard for... It was one of those things, like, when I was... I think it was last week, like, when Nightwing came out. I was like, you know what, let me read Nightwing. Let me see what's going on with Rick. Then I just saw how bad the art looked. I'm like, duh. And that's the thing. Like, I thought I got over reading bad... Like, overlooking bad art if I'm enjoying the story. Because there's a lot of stuff that I've seen that I did not like the art. But, man, like, this book completely distracted me the entire time. Because I was just like, man, Perry looks different in every panel. The conversation between him and Robinson, I did not... Honestly, the only part that I really enjoyed in this comic was actually the banter between Miss Leone and Lex in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because that, to me, I was like, you know what? This one seems like, all right, you got two powerful people. I mean, Miss Leone is presenting herself as very powerful. We still don't know much anything about her. But the way she carries herself, I'm like, all right, you got two powerful people here, you know, and it's kind of like the first time they meet and they're trying to, you know, dish out what kind of cards they have. So I liked it. I kind of liked that. Besides that, I was like, man, this to me was a tough read. But it was, I don't know if it's because of the read or, man, the art was just not for me, like, at all. Where I didn't want to. Mm. I couldn't even... I don't even think... Not even Brad Anderson that works with freaking studs like Fabok and like Gary Frank. I mean, this dude is in Doomsday Clock.
Yeah, no. But the one thing I... The one thing that I always think of...
so rough.
Well, I was going to say the one thing I always think of whenever I think of Brad Anderson is that awesome Watchmen... not Watchmen. Freaking Dr. Manhattan... cover where, like, all the superhero suits are just floating down because they've...
Oh, so good.
Yeah, that's the one thing I always think of when I think of Brad Anderson.
So, yeah. It wasn't a great issue for me,
mm-hmm.
but, I mean, not every issue is going to be, you know, a home run. So...
For sure.
This was maybe a bunt single.
But what did you think about Curse of the White Knight, issue number one?
It's one of those things that the first story...
I was going to say, I don't even think I know your opinion on the first one. So what was your opinion on the first one?
Oh, I loved the White Knight.
Yeah?
I loved it. It felt fresh, even though it's with a you know, the revolving door around the same characters that we always see. Sean Murphy was able to do something where he kind of turned the tables in regards to what seems like I've read this story before.
Mm-hmm.
So him being able to do something with the Joker that, sure, you kind of had Snyder in a sense, like after Endgame, kind of have, like, the human, you know, Bruce doesn't know who he is, and you kind of had, like, the Joker, kind of...
Yeah.
You had little moments, but it was just a nice conversation on the bench, you know? This was more, we got to see Joker medicated, I guess, like, kind of like who he is.
Yeah.
Deep down somewhere. And I thought that was really refreshing. And knowing how smart he really is, and he was able to kind of use everything that Batman has done, and kind of use it against them, I loved it. And honestly, I kind of love that Sean put that in this issue, where that's one of the things that pisses Batman off the most, that he literally threw every single mistake and everything that he's done, and he threw it in the face and he exposed him.
Yeah.
So the thing that was funny is that I was reading this book, and when I first got it and I'm getting ready to read it, I was saying to myself, man, does this need a part two? Because part one was so good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Especially the way it ended. I loved how it ended with, like, Harley and Joker. Like, that was just torment. Like, they're getting ready to marry, and just slowly but slowly he's breaking down.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, damn, this is teary. So, getting into this book, I was like, all right, come on. Just get into this. Read it like if it's the first time. And just starting the book, I was like, oh, God, I love Sean Murphy's art.
Yes.
And it immediately brought me back to the world. And yes, even though this was, like, you know, a long time ago, like, I don't know if they ever said the dates.
So,
but in regards to,
it's like 19 or hold on.
Did it say the date?
It technically did.
Oh yeah, 1685 in Arkham Manor.
Yes,
where you have, like, bro, this is literally like the resemblance of whoever the Joker ancestors and the Waynes, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. And you're just kind of seeing how everything broke down and seeing the... I really wanted to know, even though I didn't... I mean, I know people like to say this. Like, I didn't ask for this book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wasn't asking for a sequel, but you damn right believe that I am super stoked to know, because I really wanted to know what would happen next with these characters. I wanted to know, what's Joker like now?
Yeah.
Knowing that, in a way, he was kind of taken advantage of. In a way, even though it was his idea,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know if I don't even think he knew it was going to get as far as he did. So seeing his relationship with what he believes is Jack Napier, and now he feels like he needs to top everything that Jack kind of screwed up, to Bruce's mentality of, man, I have been absolutely played. I have lost trust in the people, even though... I mean, you know, relationships, even though they're kind of getting a little better, at the moment, they're still fractured.
Yeah.
And then knowing that this is a Bruce without Alfred, and you got that letter from Alfred, it kind of puts you right back into the mood. Like, I forgot that Alfred died, because it's been a while since I read it. So reading the letter, I'm like, oh my God, that's right, he died. So there were just a lot of things in this book that it just reminded me. I love how seeing Joker like reach John Paul Valley.
Yeah.
I thought that was a cool, introduction, not only to Valley, but wait, is it, I always get mixed up. Is it John Paul or Jean Paul Valley?
Everybody says John Paul.
John Paul. Okay. It's just, since it's like J E A N.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, hey, John Paul, I know John Paul. But I wanted to make sure that instead of me, I continue to say the same thing and I'm saying it incorrectly. But yeah, seeing his little story and how that got to that point, I thought it was a really cool introduction to what this villain could be.
Well, it's really cool, and because I'm going to give a shout out to Bat Force Radio real quick. They had an interview and a very spoiler review with... Sean Murphy, and they all talked about this first issue.
Okay.
And he gave a little insight on what his inspiration was as far as the flashback. You know, he wanted to throw something very Castlevania-like, which, you know, based off the... I don't know if they were ever novels. I think they were. But they had a video game, and they also have a Netflix series. Very, very cool. It's very spoilery in the sense that, like, Sean Murphy does tell Bat Force and the listeners, oh, hey, yeah, you know, in issue two, this is going to happen. But he does it very vaguely, to where, not necessarily that you're like, oh, man, I can't believe he just said that, but more of like, oh, I can't wait until that happens. Okay. So he does give a little bit of insight on that. So if you're wanting to avoid those kind of spoilers, don't listen to it. There's one point where somebody from Bat Force does say a spoiler, and he's like, oh, can somebody edit that out, or can somebody bleep it, or whatever. So they do spoil one thing, but nobody gets to hear it. Apparently, he's really good friends with the Bat Force guys, and so they're sharing stuff on Skype and Twitter and all that sorts of stuff in the midst of talking. But really, really cool what he has done with this book. He said that in this reiteration, of course, Jean-Paul is actually, like, some sort of a Vietnam vet, so he has a little PTSD. He does have, you know, PTSD is a form of a mental illness, and so that all plays into effect when he is meeting Joker. He almost, the way Sean Murphy explained it is John Paul is basically hallucinating and, like, just not seeing straight whenever he is talking to Joker. Yeah, because, you know, he knows he's a villain, but at the same time, the very first time he sees Joker, you see these wings behind him because of the stained glass. So he asks him, oh, are you an angel? You know, so there, this manipulation between Joker and John Paul is going to be phenomenal. I think it'll be amazing. I want to see more of those flashbacks, and I think we will get a little bit more.
I think we will. I think we'll get, I mean, usually the first issue is usually like an introduction to the story, but then usually by like issue two or three is usually when you get the, you know, the flashback where you kind of get that motivation why this person is doing this. Yeah. You know, you kind of get that. So I'm hoping we get it sooner rather than later, because the White Knight was what, 6 issues, 7 issues?
I think it was eight.
8 issues? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Oh, I mean, I don't know, man. I'm just happy to see Sean Murphy in drawing Batmobiles again, because this guy, nobody draws. I think I can fairly say maybe besides like Gabriel Hardman, but Gabriel Hardman is more like ships,
mm-hmm.
like in space.
Yeah.
I can't think of somebody that draws vehicles better than Murphy.
Just like the gritty, scratchy technique that Sean uses is awesome for this book.
I mean, in one panel, you get like the Adam West. I believe it's like the 66 Batman Batmobile. Then you get like the Batman, like the 89 Batman, like the Michael Keaton.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get like the Christopher Nolan Tumbler. All in one panel.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. So cool.
And they all look gorgeous.
And that does look, you know, have a little bit of a callback from the first one where all, you know, the entire GTO was using all of those Batmobiles in order to storm.
That was so epic.
Oh, dude, I kind of want to read it again just to catch up and then, you know, read this one all the way through when it finally finishes.
Well, when you invite me for Fanboy Comics, that can be the book that we do the highlight on. I don't want to call you out that you haven't invited me.
Because I
get it. We're co-hosts. So you get tired of me.
I will say there. I really need to pick that back up, because there was a point where I was even talking to Blake and I was like, "Yeah, we're gonna interview," and then like something came up and something came up and something came up, and that was like 2 months ago. So I'm a horrible host on my own show. It sucks.
Yeah. I don't want to say anything, but I'm happy you did. No.
Well, I'm scared to ask Kevin, because the way I do it is like you choose.
No. If you're going with Kevin, you have to do a Bendis.
Well, that's the thing. So the way I do it is, okay, you choose the book, I have to read it, and then we talk about it. And it's not really a podcast where I like crap on any books. It's just like, okay, well, this book is important to you and I want to know why. And
Well, if the guest is choosing the book, then I think that if you did have Kevin, I don't think he would do Bendis, because Kevin doesn't like to be put in the situation where you know, you'll crap on a book, so he wouldn't give you that.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, me and Kevin have familiar but different tastes, so I'm scared that any book that he chooses, I'm just gonna have that one nitpick that's just like, oh my gosh, I can't do this. But we'll see.
that's like must hear radio or podcasting, whatever the correct words are.
I feel like it'll be fun. So Kevin, if you're listening to this, hit me up after you listen to this, so that way we...
Wait, this is an invitation. Oh, this is amazing.
Yeah, this is an invitation. I really need to get back to that, to the Fanboy Comics podcast.
I think on our chat, when I was talking about the way that I am in terms of movies and TV shows,
is the way I am with.
Kevin reached out to me and he's like, Mark, you have to check out Crisis on Infinite Earth. He's like, I'll be the one to tell you, like, hey, if it's good. I'm like, dude, I'm like, I think for the sake of our, like, friendship, you don't want me to watch it or, like, talk about it. Because I am, with, like, movies and shows, man, I am ruthless. Like, I can't, it's not even like I'm a busy person, but if I'm watching really bad TV, I can say to myself, I have better things to do.
Yeah.
And I usually don't. I can just go, I'd rather go on a rabbit hole watching, you know, people rescuing dogs or something on YouTube. Like, it can be something random, and I'll be like, you know what? My time is more valuable watching that. Like, I think I've seen the Mr. Rogers trailer. It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. I think I've seen it, like, 25 times.
That is going to be such a heart-wrenching. See, the thing was, I showed it to my wife, and I said, okay, here's the thing. I see Mr. Rogers. Tom Hanks has the aneurysms and, like, the way he talks. Like, the twang he has in his talk is somewhat like Mr. Rogers. The only thing is, I see Mr. Rogers and I hear Forrest Gump. That's the only problem.
Like, I couldn't.
That's the only problem I have with it. But I think it's going to be such a good movie that I'm going to, like, within the first 15 minutes, I'm not even going to care.
See, the thing was, like, in the trailer, when I heard the music, like, even before you saw Mr. Rogers, just hearing the trailer music, I was immediately 5 years old again in Boston watching the show.
Dude, did you see the documentary?
And seeing Daniel Tiger and seeing Trolley, like, I was 5 years old again. So it's like nothing else mattered. And then that music, and then, like, that one time when he's like, oh, and again, I mean, you're talking to a guy with a degree in pastoral care.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like seeing a guy like Mr. Rogers, and just, like, when he says that moment, I can't believe we're reviewing a trailer right now, but it's all right. that's what we do. Mr. Rogers is a superhero, so I guess, in a way, it does connect with comic books. But yeah, when he goes in that moment where he's like, you know, sometimes, like, you love broken people like me. Mm. And he goes, well, you know, sometimes we just need to ask for help. And that's okay. I literally watched that trailer the first time because of the music. And I was like,
dude, did you watch the documentary?
Of course I did.
Okay. I will admit, I am so okay with my feelings and everything else. I cried like a little baby when I watched that documentary earlier this year. I think it was like in, I think it was last year, actually, during the summer.
I actually told my wife, I'm like, babe, I think that there's, like, if there was a psychologist that spoke with me, I think I keep a lot of feelings bottled up because I'm a guy that gets really invested in movies or when I'm watching. And there can be, like, stuff, and I'm like, I'm not a crier. I'm a tear guy. Like, a tears will come down.
Yeah.
But no, Mr. Rogers, like, broke me. I'm like, babe, I think I'm a damaged individual. I need to talk to some. I'm like, I need to talk to someone because for some reason, man, when I see, like, stuff like this, I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah.
I love you, man.
It really hit hard. And, you know, when that one quote from the trailer where it's that guy's wife and she says, please don't ruin my childhood.
Oh.
And that was basically the entire audience watching that trailer. Because, you know, there was rumors that another Mr. Rogers movie-esque thing was coming out. And it just popped out of nowhere, this trailer. And I was like, oh, man, I hope they don't ruin Mr. Rogers. And then she said that. I was like, that's smart to put inside of a trailer. That is very smart.
Yes.
I really appreciated it. But before we go on,
see, don't you feel better? Like, see, I feel better about John Paul Valley. I feel like he's going to come out of this okay.
I feel like he will. I honestly feel like he will. Now,
even though Gotham is the worst neighborhood,
now,
like, Mr. Rogers can't even save Gotham.
Minor spoilers. Sean Murphy has said that he has been working a lot on practicing sword fighting in his drawings because he wants to have a really epic fight between Azrael and Batman. So I hope.
Oh my God, that would be amazing.
Yeah. So I wonder if he's gonna, like, because it does look like the Waynes have some sort of history with sword fighting because of the flashback. But I also want to know if maybe they'll talk about Batman's training with Ra's al Ghul, you know, or the League of Shadows or whatever.
I think Batman's going to need help, and I think he's going to go back to Ra's.
That would be interesting.
Because I think because there's got to be, there doesn't have to be, but it would be nice to see kind of like, okay, well, we already know that Batman's accomplished, but he's not at this level, and he's going to need the help from, like, the Demon Head.
Yeah.
To be able to conquer what he's about to face. And I also like that it looks like the Joker, even though the Joker is back, I like that the Joker seems to still have all the memories of what happened with Jack, because clearly you know who Bruce Wayne is. He knows who Bruce Wayne is. So I kind of like that he didn't say Batman, because it's not, no, he's going after, like, Bruce Wayne. So I feel like he's going to use his, like you mentioned earlier in regards to the manipulation, I think that he's going to talk about his manipulation and with all the resources that a Bruce Wayne has, and I think he's going to kind of... I like that. I like that we still have a Joker who... He's going to be Joker, but he knows all the cards.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's...
And considering that this is, like, not canon, that's even better, because everything's open.
Yeah, for sure. The next book we're going to be talking about, of course, is Detective Comics. And I'm just going to say, this is probably the least... favorite book this week for me.
I couldn't stand this book. This book made no sense to me. I did not like it at all. I mean, Doug Mank, okay, he draws a decent Joker. Besides that, I did not. I don't have anything positive to say about this book besides
Joker looks okay. Well, this review is going to be a lot shorter than I thought, because I will completely tell you the truth here. The best thing that Mankey did in this book is the cover art Batman, like the just Batman, and the one-page credit page where it has the Joker's face. Those are the only two things that I like in this entire book.
I mean, yeah, this honestly to me just kind of felt like a weird, I don't know if they were trying to do like an some kind of off homage to kind of like Killing Joke kind of stuff.
But like also there was this,
it felt so bad.
It felt very forced, because Tomasi like also played into the, oh, well, while all the other villains are trying to take over the world, I'm just trying to have fun. And it felt very forced. With this whole tying into Year of the Villain, which I always say because of the ending, but this didn't even have to do with the offer. It had to do with just Joker plain as day saying, oh, well, I'm going to terrorize the city because I want to have fun, and I don't want to be like every other villain in the world right now and trying to take over the world. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. These are the issues that bother me, because I feel like this is an issue that's specifically only made. It does nothing to push a narrative forward.
He just wanted the Joker, and
so they figured, okay, I have to do a filler because DC's telling me to, so let me just put Joker in it, because, you know, seeing Batman and Joker together, it's going to be high sales. And it's a shame. It's a shame to like waste such an awesome Mr. Freeze, the cardstock.
Yeah.
Like, I love, like, the B, because that looked gorgeous. But, nah, man, I don't like these books, and it's something that's always pissed me off about Big Two, which is these filler books that they're just doing it because they need to push a story forward, and whatever Tomasi literally has next can't be said yet until something else happens. Like, that bothers me. That's always... So, I mean, can I say that I find it humorous when you're seeing, like Joker and Batman, they're on a ride together, and Joker's just talking away? Sure, but these kind of stories, right when I saw kind of, like, what it was in the beginning, I was like, damn it. I hate, like, it's...
It was very campy, and it was very cheesy, and it just didn't play along with how Tomasi was attempting to make the story be.
Yeah, and this was not going to be what he did with Lois, Clark, and Jonathan when they went to the fair.
Yeah.
Which was like issue 10 or something, and that was awesome. Like, that was a one-shot, but it made sense.
That's my favorite issue, you know? To be completely honest. That is Superman Carnival.
One and the one where he takes, where Superman takes the kids, the sick kids from the hospital, and took them to the Watchtower.
Oh, yeah, near the end.
And trying to see, like, who can make Batman smile and that kind of. Those two issues were, yes, they were my favorite in, like, Tomasi's run. But Tomasi does have a tendency to, in a way, I mean, well, the dude, you know, he's an older dude. Like, he's in his 50s, and sometimes he's has it, sometimes Jurgen has it, where you can kind of see writers showing their age, and just dialogue kind of seems weird.
Mm-hmm.
But Tomasi tends to have a little bit more of these kind of stories that could just be total duds. And I can't believe, like, being so positive after Mr. Rogers, I go into something that I'm like, oh, I hate. See, I learned nothing in that trailer. I learned nothing. But yeah, it's, I can't. Like, if I would be faking it on the show just to be positive,
mm-hmm.
to say that I liked this book. I read this book as an honoring the listener, you know, listening audience and chatting with you with five books.
Yeah.
But I would have been perfectly happy not even looking at this book.
Yeah, I thought that it was, because when it said next the Joker on the prior issue, I legitimately thought we were going to get an arc with the Joker. Knowing now that it was just a one-shot just to kind of throw away, he didn't need the Joker. He honestly did not. This could have been a random villain at a carnival, and he probably could have made it really fun. But instead, he tried too hard with the Joker, and it was a waste, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was a waste, but this issue just seems like the cash grab.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, Detective, Batman. Like, I'm actually curious to see how well this sells. And it will be mainly because people just see Batman and Joker.
Yep. That's basically,
honestly,
what it'll be.
I've gotten to that point where I don't want somebody writing Joker unless they're twisted. Because I feel like you need to be a twisted person, like, somewhere inside, like, you have a dark side,
mm-hmm.
to get into that, because I've seen so many Jokers now that, and I kind of have now since, I guess you could say since Snyder in New 52, Joker has had like a specific voice. So it just seems like when you're going away from the specific voice that you've been hearing, it sounds off. And these are one of those moments that I'm like, ugh. I'm like, I hope this is not the Joker in Geoff Johns' like three Joker storyline.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah,
so
let's go on to something a little bit more positive, but not necessarily too positive because of that ending. Oh my gosh. Dal H. So this one hit me really hard near the end. I will say this was basically the writer, of course, being Sam Humphries. I think this was Sam Humphries' love letter to the golden age of comics and the animated series of the DC universe.
I will say that Dial H, this was the best issue I read this week.
I could see why, and I love this issue. We didn't get to see any of our main characters use the dial. Of course, we did leave off inside of the, what do they call it? The Heroverse?
The Heroverse, yeah.
And so we got to see a little bit of a origin of the Operator and, you know, what does it mean to be inside of the Heroverse and everything else. The Operator is giving, oh my gosh, I keep forgetting his name, Miguel, a tour of the thing, and, you know, they're getting out or whatever. Of course, we see Summer stealing a Superman ship to find Superman and try to find Metropolis. She finds herself being in Gotham, which I thought was really funny. But
does that ship, I mean, obviously it's because of different artists, you know, it's going to be a little different, but is that supposed to have like the inspiration of like Grant Morrison's, like the new 52?
I think so.
Okay.
Which makes no sense because, I don't know, I'm pretty sure you listened to the episode with me and Juice, but Justice League Detroit does not exist in this continuity, technically.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, like, for it to be in here was a little bit confusing, but I do appreciate, you know, the callbacks and everything, so, you know, I don't care too much about it. But we get to the nitty-gritty stuff and the very heart-wrenching stuff here at the very end, because we get the question of what is...
Well, actually, before we get to that part, okay, just because that is the heart-wrenching part, I do want to do, like, the call-out, because it's always, like, I always get confused when I'm looking at the arc, because sometimes it looks very similar.
Uh-huh.
Is that an homage to New Frontier Darwin Cook, or is that Fleischer?
I'm pretty sure
not looking, it's on page 9.
Yeah, it's on page 9. I am pretty sure it is an homage to Cook's art, because that is New Frontier. Okay.
Because Darwin Cook, but also like the Fleischer Superman, it's in times. I mean, it kind of looks the same. But you are getting so much of the honor of, like, a Golden Age and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That it's kind of like, man, Fleischer Superman was a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
Which I guess in terms of time would make more sense. But Darwin Cook's, you know, his artistry kind of resembles something that you would see back then.
Yeah.
So that's why, but I'm seeing this in the lens of another artist, Joe Quinones, who did an amazing job. So that's why I was curious, like, when you saw this, because it kind of has like a New Frontier where you're looking at, it's kind of like a profiled version of a lineup.
Yeah, and that's so why I think it really is supposed to be a callback to the New Frontier. Yeah,
but when I saw that page, I was like, okay, like this book is winning me over and over besides what you're going to get into now, which was, you know, Miguel's.
Okay, so in the very beginning of this book, we learn that something happened to Miguel's parents. And it was like, mm-hmm, oh, that kind of sucks. And you saw that he kind of turned into this kid that, you know, was a rebel. And, you know, you thought, oh, he's doing nothing with his life after what happened to his parents. But mm-hmm, we see why. And it is the most heart-wrenching thing I have ever read for a Superman story. Now, I understand that in Deceased number 3, we just saw Jonathan Paul Kent, you know, turn into...
Dude.
Yeah.
That...
Tears.
Dude.
Tears. Tears.
Oh.
Like, all... I've read that. I've read The Death of Superman time and time again, almost yearly. Like, there's so many...
Or Action Comics with Action Comics Brainiac?
Yes. I have read so many sad Superman stories. This one hit me so hard. So, we see that Miguel is being the daredevil that he is with all of his friends. And we see a police officer come down and he says, hey, there's something that I need to tell you about your parents. We see a very dramatic silhouette of a plane crashing. And then you see Miguel in his tuxedo, his suit. You know, it looks like he just left from the funeral, and he's yelling for Superman. Superman comes in, big smile. Hey, man, I heard you. You know, what's up? How are you doing? And Miguel just throws the bike at him and is just screaming at him, where were you? Where were you? My parents, why didn't you save them? And he's crying, and I almost lost it, dude. This was the hardest thing to read, because there's the big argument all the time when it comes to, you know, Superman and superheroes and why can't they be in this storyline when, you know, this character really needed the Justice League and everything else. And Superman mm-hmm. says it right here. He says, you know, I'm so, so sorry about your parents. I wasn't there. I can't be everywhere. And that hit me like a ton of freaking bricks, dude. Miguel being...
Yeah, well, and it's also, like, see, like, the thing that also got me there is just in terms of what makes, and it's subtle, but what makes Superman awesome is when you saw, when they first saw each other, he was standing up. So he looked like a god.
Yes.
Like he's standing above and, Miguel.
But now he's...
And Miguel
he's,
was hugging him.
He's on his level now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. It, like, those are small little things that it was kind of, you know, like, those are the things that, like, I see and I'm like, bro, freaking Superman. Well, and it was awesome. And seeing his face, because his face from the smile to the confusion to, like...
Now, like, the concern and sadness.
He was intently
sadness.
Listening to him.
Yeah.
Because you saw that he had a face that he was listening to what he said when he said, you're supposed to save everyone, to then when he hugged him, you saw his face where it was, like, just pure, like, empathy.
Yeah.
And like, there were... It was beautiful. And I love how he says, like, he's like, I can't save us all. And he's like, I can't do it, not alone. He's like, that's why I need help from everyone. And I thought that was really powerful. And I love how they put it in the beginning when he was being traveled, when Miguel was going through the hero verse and they were kind of talking about Superman, and they have like a very Jack Kirby-esque kind of like a wall.
Yeah.
Of like the... And it kind of looks like the source wall in a way. Mm-hmm. But it just has Superman, and it just kind of shows like different iterations on how he could have been bad, but he didn't, and he chose this, you know, he chose this path. And I like how they're, in a way, like I actually really like how we're creating these new characters like a Naomi and like a Miguel. And I love that they're using it based on the inspiration of one way or another, like Superman is the reason.
Yeah.
Like, I like that because I think that that's a really good start of building new, you know, new heroes when you have, like, this specific person to look up to.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, one of my big things as far as character development, I love character development. When we first see Miguel in the very first issue, he had his pool accident, and he opens his eyes and he sees Superman. And from then on, he has this diary or this journal. He says, Dear Superman. And so he's having all of these conversations with Superman throughout each issue. And then we learn here how much at one point he felt like hatred towards Superman. And then it dawned on me, all that happened, and he's still making those journal entries to Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so you can tell, hey, you know, that conversation that he had with Superman here in this issue 6 or issue 7, like, it legit, like, Miguel took that and he said, okay, you know, you can't save everybody. I understand that now. You know, I'm going to be a better person and think of that whenever something happens.
Yeah, it formed him. It formed him.
Yes.
Yeah.
I really, really love that. And, you know, at the end of this story... we see that Thunderbolt is actually in control of his own body again. He gets the H-Dial, and he basically creates... He basically makes every phone in Metropolis an H-Dial. And at the very end...
God, that's nuts.
You see all of the beams of light of everybody being created into a hero. And it says, Next, Metropolis City of Heroes. I am super excited for next issue.
I can't wait just to see. Like, I hope it's just a two-page panel, like a two-page of about 15 crazy stories.
Oh, that would be... like, this.
Like, that's honestly, that's all I want. I just want next issue to just be, okay, like, the first couple of pages, kind of recap, remind the reader what happened, get the light, ba 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 ba. And then after that, it just goes balls to the wall nuts with just awesome, crazy freaking stories. And then, you know, kind of like, you know, like book cap it.
Yeah.
Like end cap it. Like, oh, I hope so. But yeah, this, by far and away, this was my favorite issue. Because, you know, what we're going to talk about next, which is our last book, which is Flash 75. Flash 75 to me... was it's like it's one of those stories where it I had like two different thoughts, which was the third act was amazing, and it felt the most rebirth that I have felt in a long time.
Yeah.
And it shows a lot of, man, I really miss the Flash family in its prime.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then it was like I was reading the whole first half of the story, and I'm like, dude, I need this year one story to end. There's only so much turtle I can take.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Like, I mean, like, the thing was, it's just, I liked it at first. I mean, you got a little bit, I mean, the turtle, I mean, I think Williamson, kudos to him, he made a really, like, crappy character interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's with especially the Steel Force, Sage Force. I mean, I still wish we didn't have it, but if we're gonna have it, at least use it in a good way. Don't turn Trickster and these people into Hulksters. No, use actual characters and, you know, kind of take advantage of what their actual powers are. So, I enjoyed it. But, dude, this was... Did you have issues in Action Comics when Rebirth started? Where, like, the first, like, four issues, it was just Superman and Doomsday?
I will be completely honest.
Or not as much because it's Superman and we're Superman fanboys.
I didn't mind it much because it was Tyler Kirkham that was doing the art, and so I was like, okay, I can do this.
Okay.
Well,
wasn't it? It was Kirkham and Patrick Zurcher.
Yeah. It was. They were like on and off.
They're both great.
Yeah, but like for me, it was. The reason why I was a little peeved was the whole mystery of there being two Clarks. And I was just like, okay, like, I want to know already. Stop trying to, like, make this into a bigger thing that it needs to. And it took forever to finally get that answer.
I mean, it did take a while, but I loved the mystery. Like, I didn't have an issue with it. I just meant specifically where, I mean, there's only so many titles you can have.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's just... It's just the same battle.
Yeah.
And it's just like, my gosh, I can't hear...
It felt like the same thing. It felt like an episode of Dragon Ball Z where, like, 40 episodes are one fight. Yeah. I totally understand.
Yeah. And then, like, for example, you, since I know that you're kind of like the Bendis, I believe some people in our chat were like, oh, I would love to see Williamson take over Batman. I'm like, no.
So...
Because it's been a while since I've seen... Williamson in what I like, and for example, in this issue, there was a moment where Turtle's like, "We'll drag the multiverse to a halt," and then you get the Flash. He's like, "You might be king of Central City in the future where you come from, Turtle, but I'm here to put a stop to you today." Like those are like the dialogues. Like, you know how you're picky with like Bendis,
yeah,
like. See, I, the reason why I wanted to point that out, because you get that corny in everything. In every comic, you get that level of corny, and so I guess it's just like, it's all the other little subtle things. But that's what I'm saying. Like, this issue, I feel like every issue that he has fought Turtle, he has talked about how he's been inspired by, what's the girl that he likes? I'm drawing a blank.
Iris?
Iris, there we go. I was like, Linda, no, that's Wally. Iris. He talked about Iris in every issue, on how Iris would just keep on going. I'm like, dude, this is like rehash and rehash and rehash. But then we got to the second, and then we got to like the third half, after, I think it was once he broke down and he was like, hope, and everything just got like reversed, and you're seeing the after effects with what was going on in the future, with like the future Barry that we saw, and like those moments were cool. Yeah, and then it was really... You got to see a little bit of kind of like, oh man, it's Flash Day, and you kind of saw how all that stuff started.
Mm-hmm.
The introductions to Wally, and in this moment, because of, I guess, man, I kind of wonder now, like in the back, when Barry met Wally, was Wallace always there in the intro, or is this just a subtle way of kind of bridging New 52 in there? But I always wonder now, like, if there was a Wallace around there somewhere when Wally first met Barry.
I don't think so.
Like, I mean, I don't think so either, but now I'm just curious if you just happen to see him in the background somewhere. But I loved it, because now I'm like, oh man, I started to get the little, you know, the little butterflies. Like, I'm like, oh, this is what I love. And I loved it. And then that splash page, yo, that was a gorgeous splash page. I mean, you saw everyone. It was the Flash family. And I'm like, oh, God, I'm getting that love again for not just Flash, but just what I know DC Comics can bring.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just... So that's why, like, this issue's tough, because I needed the first end-to-end.
Yeah.
But I wanted more of the second half.
I feel the exact same way. The one thing that I did not like is that they brought back the New 52 Flash suit. Like, goddamn. Mm. Like, I legit thought... Because the one thing that was with Superman and with Batman is that they were getting their old suits back. And so there was a big rumor that everybody was gonna... Because the whole thing with New 52 and Rebirth was that they were slowly, you know, going to not retcon New 52, but transfer back into their old pre-New 52 selves. And that was the whole reason why Wally was there, because he knew everything and all of this stuff. And so I thought slowly they were going to turn all of these characters back to their old renditions. And so I was like, oh, cool, you know, Barry has his old suit. And the issue immediately after, he basically vibrates at such a speed it gets him a new suit. And I was like, I'm not happy with it. Okay, whatever, let's move on.
Especially when you're looking at a picture like this where you're happening, where you're seeing like all the past characters, like you would hope that there would be a little bit more. But I honestly think that once everything kind of gets back to its normalcy and hopefully a little bit back to more the Rebirth days, I'm kind of thinking that we will happen to see that. But I mean, I don't know anymore. Like, it's hard to go into the future of what I think DC is going to be in the future, because I honestly don't know. I don't know, is Doomsday, you know, still going to be a major factor in the universe? I just don't know anymore. So yeah, it's kind of...
For sure.
I feel like Doomsday is just going to end up being, like, its own story, considering what, like, Tom King in the interview that he had with iFanboy, and he was mentioning that, you know, Batman just has... I mean, DC has really big plans for Batman going into 2020, which will then go monthly, which is going to lead into something really huge going into, like, 2021.
Yeah.
And that's when it leads to 100. So I'm like, oh, man. So I feel like Doomsday's not really going to have a huge effect.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a bummer.
For sure. So,
I mean, we'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens. But either way, I mean, it was a decent week. Nothing really... I mean, luckily we had Curse of the White Knight and Dial H.
Yes,
because
for sure.
Those to me were... They were like a saving grace for it to feel like a really long week. And I think on our chat, somebody mentioned, I don't know who it was, that, you know, we're going to have a Scott Snyder heavy week next week.
I think it was
which
Kevin.
Which is always great. Okay, because we're going to get Scott Snyder, which is, the end of The Batman Who Laughs. I'm forgetting his black label. What's it called?
Last Night on Earth.
Yes, Last Night on Earth. I'm assuming we're getting Tom King Batman, City of Bane.
Yeah, and then Snyder doing Justice League also.
Yes, Justice League, Batman with King. I'm guessing it will be like Brian Michael Bendis Superman. I don't know when Leviathan is coming out. I mean, so it's...
It's going to be a heavy week, for sure.
Yeah, I'm excited for next week. So I'm kind of... I'm pumped, and that's kind of like already, and especially with us, since we get books a little earlier, and since we're talking on Friday, I mean, I'm already getting emails. So I'm like, yeah, so it's like, I can kind of like forget about this week.
Yeah.
And just jump into next week.
Yeah, basically.
I'm a freaking time traveler. So. Anyways.
But.
I'm sorry for being so negative.
No, it's all good. I couldn't. We got to talk Mr. Rogers. We got to talk Dial H.
You know what? I'm gonna watch the trailer again.
All right. After every episode, you can find us on Twitter at the Comic Book Legion podcast on our Twitter. You can email us at comicbooklegion@gmail.com. If you would like to be a contributor through our website, we, like Mark said, we get the books early. We do get to read them early. We get to review those books. And, of course, you could tell your friends and, you know, you'd be the coolest guy on the block because you already know what's going to happen a week or 5 days before it actually happens. But, of course, you can find me two places on my Fanboy Comics podcast, Twitter at Fanboy Comics Pod, and then, of course, my personal at Fanboy Clay. And, of course, I do manage the CB underscore Legion Twitter account with Mark here. Mark, where can they find you?
You can find me at Mark Reads Comics on Twitter. And, yeah, as Clay already mentioned, CB underscore Legion. Yeah, we really appreciate you guys reaching out with, you know, getting some new contributors. Yeah, it's a good time. We're growing slowly but surely. It's happening. It's a lot of fun. I mean, Clay kind of opened up this whole can of worms with these podcast ideas on our chat, where it looks like a lot of people have a lot of ideas and there's a lot of things that they want to do. So now it's just getting into the logistics of time. There's only so many hours in the day, and most of, I think, everyone in our group is married.
I think so.
A large chunk are married, so it's, you know, we just got to figure all that stuff. But if we can get that going, we have a lot of cool content, and I think it's only a matter of time before we get that rolling. But besides that, yeah, I mean, if we got nothing else to say, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
All right, see you later.